Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Helga, who is here to speak with us about her experience of practicing with the recent Musings article. Welcome, Helga.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Jen.
Hey, can you hear me okay, Helga?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly. I'm asking because our signal here is just so not good, but good. Please let me know if that changes.
Yep, I will.
So, as you know, for folks, actually, there may be people who don't know that the Musings article is a beautiful writing that Ashwini writes each month, and it comes out to anyone who's on the monastery mailing list and just chooses a topic. I project something she's looking at in her own practice, and it's always so beautifully crafted and offered as a gift to all of us in Sangha to look at and practice along with it. And, you know, I just realized that so often we don't get to really hear how people are practicing with it, because unlike something like the year-long retreat where we have a radio show each morning and we get to hear what everyone's seeing around it, often we don't get to hear what people are seeing around what they're seeing in the Musings article. So we like to feature it sometimes on Good News to get a chance to do that. So thank you for being with us this afternoon to let us know, share with us what you're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I read the Musings article every month, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure why this one. It just really grabbed my attention.
Yeah,
because, well, first, you know, what I realized is that there's such an enormous amount of resistance for me to look closer, like what in the article, what she writes about, you know, really looking very, very closely at all the different little pieces and parts and, you know, going from the general to the very, very specific, which is, you know, what we do in the year-long retreat. And
Exactly.
You know, I have the same experience every month. You know, I'm really excited about the theme of the month. I start off really strong, and then, you know, I can identify, you know, what I'm working with. And then I see slowly over time, I see things peter out. And you know, and it's really become so clear to me that ego doesn't want me to look at it. It doesn't want me to see exactly, how it gets me. It wants to stay in the shadow.
Exactly so. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're suffering, and I have a general sense of how it happens, and, you know, the broad strokes, and that's good enough. That's good enough, right? Because when you get down to the specificity, boy, that's where the ego starts to just squirm, doesn't it?
Yeah, every time. You know, and I thought, you know, it's like I started being around, you know, spirituality since my early 20s, and there was always, you know, the talk of ego and everything, and I had like this, you know, it was always a very vague idea. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I could see it, and I could see that it's there, and I could see the validity of it all, but I've never really understood what that is, you know, how it actually shows up, what it looks like, and how do I identify it. And, you know, and the more I've been around you guys, the more, you know, I can see it starting to take actual shape, and I can see it when it comes at me. I can see it sometimes when you know, when it comes out of my mouth and in my actions and everything. But yeah, it's just really, you know, the very details of it all and how it actually works. It doesn't want me to do it. And I think, you know, I thought, I'm really grateful that, you know, that you asked me, because it gave me an opportunity to actually read it a few more times and, you know, really think about it. And, you know, I think that, you know, what came up for me when I was thinking about it was that, you know, the moment I really pay attention to something, you know, very specific, you know, like you know, we are working with play, and I, you know, I had like something that that came up for me in that that had to do with competition and winning and all that kind of stuff. And you know, when I really start paying really close attention to what goes on when I'm in the process of playing, there's like a bunch of things that happen. One is that, you know, when I actually pay attention, I'm not identified and I can see things.
Yes.
You know, there's that whole process of, you know, that I am worthy of that much attention.
Yeah.
There's another level of that where I feel like, you know, it's like I've never paid that much attention to what actually goes on inside of myself, and you know, to feel that I'm worthy of that much attention.
Yeah. Oh, it's so perfect. It's so perfect, Helga, because that's what would in culture in general, that's what gets called, ironically, egocentric. Oh, you're so egocentric, like giving yourself, like
right.
looking at yourself in that way and giving yourself all that attention. It's the complete opposite of what's actually so, right?
Right.
Because what it does is it starts to actually drill down on how that ego is maintaining itself and living itself out through me. And so quite the opposite, by really looking at the specificity of it, I have access to seeing through it and making another choice.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's this this beautiful couple of lines in it that I just wanted to read quickly because it's exactly what we're talking about. That far from being navel-gazing, such attention trains the awareness to be aware of when attention is on suffering, and free the awareness to exercise an alternate choice of attention. You know, because what's wrong?
Yeah.
Is in actually looking at, if it stays in the generalities, you said it so perfectly, then that suffering stays in the shadows, and in the shadows, it's safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that sense of something like the musings article being an invitation to look in that way. And I love what you said. You said, thank you for the invitation to be on Good News today, because it gave me the opportunity to read it again several times. And I project that is the process right there, right? I'm really reading it, and I'm looking. And as I'm reading it, this is my experience anyway, I'm looking to my own experience of what the words are pointing to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I, you know, I read it a few times, and then I started to really think about, you know, what it says to me. You know, I had this thought, and I don't know if this is a good analogy, but it popped up because it just happened. My sister-in-law is writing an article about one Jewish woman that died in her neighborhood in the Holocaust.
Mm.
And she's really she just picked this, you know, she stumbled over this person, and she started to really look what happened to her. You know, and I thought, it's kind of very similar because, you know, if you talk about,
perfect.
You know, the 6 million Jews that died in the Holocaust, you know, it's like, it's so big, I can't even really comprehend what that actually means. But when you bring it down to this one person, you know,
that's
what
right.
happened, who did what, and how did she end up in the concentration camp, then I feel like I can relate to that, and I can feel with this person what actually happened there. And it's similar to this, you know. It's like when I really pay attention, you know, to, you know, what happened to me when, you know, when in my head I think if I want to win, then I'm not a spiritual person. And if I don't want to win, why even bother? You know, and what is underneath all that? You know, it's like, and where, how do I always end up, you know, kind of between a rock and a hard place? Then I can actually, you know, relate to my own suffering in a different way.
Yes.
You know, because then then I can see what's happening. And and you know how, and it's always the same. You know, I always end up in a similar place, and no matter what the content is. You know, it always ends up in a very similar place somehow. And then I can, you know, have then I can feel compassion, and then the compassion arises, you know, for this person.
Exactly. It's such a perfect analogy, Helga. It's absolutely perfect. Right. It's exactly what Ashwini describes in the article to us, of just stopping at a patch of green, just a patch of ground, and just look, just a tiny little patch, and just watch, just sit there and look at everything that's going on in there, and just blown away by the miracles of what we just passed by. I mean, that's just a patch of grass, you know, it's just whatever. But when we really look, there's so much going on there. And so the same thing with ourselves. Like, we just, I mean, you know, whatever the beliefs we're trained to just gloss over, well, I'm a selfish person, or I'm just competitive, that's just how I am, or I'm just whatever. And we go on, which allows us to kind of be in this, like, basically the self-hating relationship with this person. But when we look at the specificity of it, what happens is love becomes the process. Compassion. We fall in love with everything. We fall in love with ourselves, with the process of life, with the process of awareness. That's just a natural outgrowth of that level of looking at something with such exquisite care. Changes everything.
And you know, and then it kind of occurred to me, as I felt like, you know, I mean, love is such a kind of, I don't know, it's like, it's often a word, you know, I mean, what is that? And but then I thought, you know, to pay attention. That is love, I think. You know, it's like when and it doesn't matter if I pay attention to myself or to somebody else or to something. That is the process of love, is attention.
That is. That's right. Oh. Big smile. Absolutely. I think you've hit right on it, Helga.
And I wouldn't have and I wouldn't have thought of that if I hadn't gotten this invitation and read that article three times and really sat here and paid attention.
Right. And no wonder that we as conditioned humans are pushed to do, move. Because that's what has us miss that. That level of attention. Wow. Boy, I could go on and on. How about you?
I don't know.
There's so much about it. Well, thank you so much, Helga. Thank you for the looking, and thank you for the generosity of being with us today to share what you're seeing.
Thank you for the invitation. Really, I really appreciate it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Take good care. Okay.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Helga. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm great. How are you?
Good. I too, have a great big smile on my face. That was so fun. Attention is love. Love is attention.
Yes.
What I saw as they were, Helga and Jen were finishing up that conversation, is how, and then I don't know what word we want to put on it, but so what ego does in grabbing somebody's attention is turn it into what it's not, which is not love, right? So ego is constantly trying to get attention on it for its negativity, for its something wrong and not enough, instead of us having attention for what it is, which is love, which we experience as they were talking in attending to someone else, attending to ourselves, attending to something. We have that experience of love. And then when we attention goes to ego, not so much.
Yeah, not so much. And as you're talking, what drops in about is Ashwini always talking about negation, and conditioning
yes.
is negating whatever's going
yes.
on.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, it's a great argument for keeping attention where we want it to be. And I was reflecting as Jen and Helga were talking about with something like a Musings article, I hope people don't miss the grand and glorious opportunity to record those and listen to them and be in that process of attending to an expression of presence and experience the joy of going, coming to presence as we attend.
Yes. And what also dropped in as you were talking is we always talk about the importance of participation and, showing up for whatever practice commitments we have is the secret sauce, seems to me.
Yes. Yeah. Do you have
announcements? I have announcements here. I do. The powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat offers foundational work in going beyond self-hate that is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. Retreats are coming up in August and in October.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Gosh, and you know, we just, could I just interrupt
yes,
you for
please.
A second with that?
Go ahead.
So I have the pleasure of receiving the requests from people for coaches and that sort of thing. And the people coming out of those retreats, the ones that we've had so far this year, who are asking for coaches and talking about what happened to them as a result of doing that retreat and kind of in this, is that the best thing for me to do? Because I don't want to lose this. I don't want to lose sight of this. I want to stay focused on this. How can I, you know, it's really wonderful. So one in August and then not until October. But if you haven't done it or if you've done it and you've fallen back into listening to voices instead of listening to what is so and true about you, then wouldn't hurt to sign up.
Yes. Participants in the Mornings with the Mentor group coaching program will create recordings with the mentor to support intentions for the day and for life. Don't miss the opportunity to spend time each morning with someone who loves you unconditionally. The four-week coaching program starts August 7th. Yes, and bring conscious, compassionate awareness to your Saturday tasks or any project you choose at an at-home working meditation retreat on August 24th. The day includes exercises, facilitated virtual discussions, mindful eating, and designated work periods. The Family Karma Retreat in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is not an exploration of childhood trauma or family dynamics from a content perspective, but rather an investigation of the ego, of the story of me. Through this exploration, we will be able to see the many ways that story is still dominating us today, and we'll practice the tools that enable us to transcend ego's control. This retreat, September 2nd through 7th, includes yoga, meditation, and guidance with you, Sherry.
Uh-huh. It's a fun one.
It's a fun one. And right before that retreat, on Sunday, August 1st, Sherry will be leading a workshop in York, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. Is it August 1st or September 1st?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it was written August, but I can see that September is the correct month there.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
In York. Uh-huh.
Yep. Sunday, September 1st. Is that right?
All right. Yes, I believe so. That's when I'm going to be there. Now, I don't know who else is doing what, but that's why I plan to be there.
Thank you for that correction.
Yeah.
And for details on this and for other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can press *6 and then 1 to make guest show and get in the queue. And a conversation of about 5 minutes on one topic is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, Sherry, I think we're ready here.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Todd in Olympia, Washington.
Hello, hey, Todd.
Hi. My ears were just burning there, just speaking of the retreat.
Oh, that's right. That's
people.
Right. You just haven't even been home hardly any length of time at all.
Oh, man. You want to just a testament to how absolutely amazing that week was for me. Just has brought my practice to just, you know, the word that keeps coming to me is just hope, Sherry, you know, like just, it just gave me such a deep, deep, profound sense of hope that I just have never had before. And, and just, so grateful. And the facilitator
and
is just dynamite, just unbelievable.
They are good, aren't they?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, well, just like you said, it's the only kind you got, right? Dynamite facility. But,
yeah. Well, and I just want to speak briefly before I ask you what else is going on.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to project that hope that you feel is based on an experience that you now know.
Yes.
Isn't that true?
No, it's so true. I have never experienced the ability to be so still before. Like,
mm-hmm.
I just thought I was incapable. I thought, wouldn't you know, there was something wrong with me. Like, I just thought that I just didn't have the ability, and so to be in that structure, that privileged environment, just, and I mean, I've done a lot of work. I've done a lot of journaling, which are exactly the same, you know, 20 years later, right? You know how that goes. And so yeah, just the whole thing. I got 3 boys, and already I got 2 have committed. So, you know, it might take us a year or two to get them down there, but pretty soon, hopefully it's going to be a family affair. So I keep on thinking about, it was like my Disneyland, the happiest place on earth, you know?
Uh-huh. This is the real happiest place on earth,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Walt was wrong about that.
But
all right.
So it's kind of what I wanted to talk about is kind of building on that. And I had to kind of laugh because, you know, I remember facilitators telling us, you know, you might have a little bit more energy than you're used to after leaving the retreat. And, I'm someone who has been, you know, diagnosed bipolar in the past. And the one thing I struggle with is mania, you know, is getting manic. And I have been so energized and I've been so excited and I have been so just over the moon that at the same time I find myself like I find myself getting attacked by the voices even harder. Like, man, they are full onslaught terror, and I find myself, you know, struggling to sleep, and I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on, you know, for someone who, you know, was on lithium at one time, you know, who really like struggled with what that means to have that, not as much as the depression now, but as much as that kind of that manic kind of, I mean, what is that? Is that ego? Is that me needing to hit the meditation cushion more?
I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about this, but if I had been born at a different time, that would have been my diagnosis. It was manic depressive back then, and I was actually too early for that. But that's what it would have been. And I always I've always laughed about it, that I was so glad there wasn't medication, because mm-hmm. what they would have medicated was the mania.
Yeah.
And I liked that. if they could have just, you know, medicated the depressive, then and left me with the manic, I would have been fine, because I actually loved it. It's so creative, and so life is just very exciting. And when one is manic, and I never did the, you know, go to Las Vegas and gamble away the house or any of, you know, that kind of thing that people report getting into. So it was never a problem for me, but certainly I knew that very well, that place of just can't sleep, just don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, of course, really need to and flip to the other side of it. But one of the things, I don't know if you've ever read our depression book, but that was the most, I think, there were two profound discoveries for me in being in the monastery and practicing with being manic depressive. And one was discovering that the depression was a result of that extraordinary energy imploding. And when it collapsed, that was the experience of depression. And that the energy actually didn't go anywhere. It was still there. And I just needed to learn to manage it, which is how I learned the relationship between exercise and depression. And so for me, that's the way I've always operated, is just being with the nervous system primarily,
mm-hmm.
and how it manifests in the body, and then doing what is necessary, what is required in order to manage both of those.
Well,
but not to be afraid of either one, because that's the killer.
Well, yeah, because it's almost, and you're right. I'm fortunate enough to not, you know, I'm stable. I mean, you know, now they call it bipolar 1, bipolar 2, right? So, I mean, I guess I'm a
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, 1 is the one where you are gambling away the house, and the 2 is probably more like me, where I'm still highly functional. You know, keep a job, pay
mm-hmm,
my bills,
yeah.
that kind of stuff. But,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, it's funny you mentioned exercise, because I've just started to run again, and that was kind of some insight given to me, is that Todd, you're still going to have this mania. It's your responsibility to control.
See, and that's right. And I wouldn't even call it mania.
I got to
the point of I'm low energy. I'm high energy.
Ooh.
Because mania makes it something.
Yeah.
And so what does it mean that I'm high energy? Well, you know, I'm going to go exercise, I've always done really physical work. And so I'm just going to go out and work really hard all day. And at the end of the day, I'll be tired. 'Cause I will be. And if I'm not sleeping as much as I usually would, I'm not going to worry about it. Because, again, the worry, the anxiety is such a driver in all of this. So when it turns into a conversation and labeling, this is just, you know, my little opinion here, but all of Western medicine with its labeling, oh, my God, labeling is just ego's favorite tool. Right. Yeah. So let's just parse it down and get a label for everything so that you don't have to be with your experience. You just be with a label. You know, it's kind of like I'm hungry. And so I'll be with the label of sandwich. It's just not going to do it for me. Right.
Yeah.
And so just high energy and low energy. And then how can you be with yourself so that you're having the energy for yourself.
Yeah.
It's not being used against you. You're having it for yourself. So, you know, you dance more than usual. you know, whatever it is.
Well, and I have been dancing a lot. And especially, it seems like that topic's come up during the, you know, the year-long retreat. I'm not dancing. So
We're big dancers.
Yes. Oh, me too. And yeah, music or no music, it hasn't really mattered. So. But yeah, you know, not putting a label to it, that really resonates, because you're right, because that's where ego, then it's like, oh, well, you're manic, and then that means that Todd, you're this, and Todd, you're that, and blah, blah, blah. And
that's right.
No.
That's right. And then it's just a story. There's no need to be present, because there's a story that explains everything. And we don't want a story to explain everything. We want to be present. And to be present such that you become an expert on what it feels like at every little difference in degree of energy in your body and how it shows up in the different areas of your body and where you tense against it or you can relax into it or, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Okay, so helpful, Sherry. I just, grateful. Can't say it enough.
Me too. Me too, Todd. Me too. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Talk
thank you so
soon,
much.
Then.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. Sherry, I love that discussion about labels and the freedom that comes from not using them. It just seems like a label is a box. It's a limitation. It's fixed in time. It's, it's concrete.
just completely unnecessary. Doesn't do anything for anything except ego.
Yes. Yes. Totally.
Yeah, it just distances us from life. And we don't want to be distant from life. We want to be distant from ego, but not from life.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And we have another call here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Anna from Seattle.
Well, hello.
Hi, Anna.
Hello. Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I can also tell a story about the labels. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it may just create fear. I feel like,
ego loves it.
Yeah. I think what I wanted to talk about is just I feel I am having a little bit of hard. I mean, I've always I think had that kind of hard time connecting, like and feeling
a hard time connecting.
Yeah.
Mhm.
Yeah, just connecting. I mean, in quotes with other people. There's just always social anxiety, and I just don't. I mean, I just so believe that. Well, no, it's so much in my nerve. That I don't belong or you know, that I'm separate or I don't know, and I want to have, so often I Well, I feel like I want more people. I want to have more people in my life and just have like a happy social life. But part of me doesn't even want that because I often don't feel comfortable around other people. So it's like I don't want it and I want it. So I'm not sure exactly.
Well, that's perfect though, isn't it? It really is perfect. I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I described that what you're talking about is going through life. You step on your left foot, and then you step on your right foot, and then the left foot, and then the right foot, and then the left foot, and the right foot. But I'm not describing moving forward. It's all just happening in the same place. So I'm on the left foot. I want a happy social life. I'd like to have more people in my life, then move to the right foot. No, I actually wouldn't because I'm uncomfortable around people and I don't really, over to the left foot. I'd like to have more people in my life. It would be great to have over to the right foot. No, I really don't really want more. A person can go through a lifetime doing that and having no result except staying in exactly the same place, giving a ton of attention to ego.
Yeah, so what's the next step? Well, what do I need to do again?
Okay. Well, what occurred to me when you first started talking is to ask you, do you feel connected with you, to you?
Probably often I don't.
And, you know, one of the clues on it is that you're with people and you're hearing a conversation about discomfort and not belonging, not fitting in, and not, okay?
Yeah.
So the relationship that you're engaged in is inside your head with ego.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you're uncomfortable with other people. You're uncomfortable with you. You're uncomfortable with other people because the conversation you're in is one of uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so
do you have a? Go ahead.
To the nervous system, you know, it's so connected. How my nervous system works. It's very believable. It's
yes.
Kind of
yeah.
Tricky to.
Well,
because
when we are in that kind of conversation, it's upsetting, and that affects our nervous system. Right? Now, conditioning would like us to believe it's the other way around. Right? My nervous system is upset, and therefore I feel uncomfortable. But my nervous system isn't going to be upset if it's left by itself, if it's left alone. So say if I sat for an hour and say I could actually concentrate on breathing, and I sit there for an hour and I breathe. Okay? Or maybe I just sit there for an hour and I listen to really soothing, calm music. Or maybe I'm getting a massage. Or maybe I'm in a samadhi tank or whatever. The nervous system is not having any problems. But as soon as the conversation starts about what's wrong and what's missing and how it should be different and how it's your fault, let's face it, then the nervous system reacts to that.
Yeah. Okay. And I really, the one time you had a conversation with somebody about how you know, once you listen to recordings and other things for 24/7, you know, then you will see a result. So I really need
yes.
to like, because it's like just, I mean, it's just 24/7 ego, you know. So I have
exactly.
to amp it up.
That's right. That's exactly right. It you know, when I make that case for people, if you would listen to the recordings that are true and so, and know what you love and what's good about life and what you enjoy and all of those kinds of things. If you could listen to those around the clock, it's a certain experience. It's what's called well-being. Okay? And what people don't realize, even though we talk about it all the time and it's so obvious and it makes perfect sense, people are listening to recordings around the clock, and they're negative. It's not like between recording and listening, putting in my earbuds and listening to recordings that I've made, or recordings of the Musings article. Well, I would have made that, that we were talking about earlier, or
the show, hey, Sherry,
or whatever. Yeah.
Sherry, you are breaking up a little bit, kind of coming and going to my ear here.
Oh, curses.
It's not done with me. Okay, I'm trying to find.
Of course, you're clear now.
Okay. Yes, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, where did I go away? Does anybody remember?
Well, I could catch most of it. It was just coming in and out a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, the point that I was making is that people don't realize the choice is between recording and listening or doing nothing. The choice is between recording and listening with something that you choose or recording and listening with what ego is choosing. Because even though there are no earbuds and there's no little recording device, that's a recording that's going on in people's heads all the time around the clock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So your assignment.
When I do that, when I listen to a recording, then I'm still hearing ego, you know? I'm still listening to ego.
I'm not really listening
to the recording. Or it's
that's
really
right. You have to train yourself. You have to train yourself.
Yeah.
Just like when people are, they tell me in sitting meditation, and they'll say, you know, I can count to 10 and make a shopping list. Well, then you're not paying attention, right? So that's what we're learning to do is pay attention. So you're training yourself to have your attention on what you want rather than having attention on what ego demands you to attend to.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
Okay.
It's getting clearer, isn't it? I'm not saying it's easy, but it gets more and more obvious or simple, or if we narrow it down to what it is that we need to be doing, and that's very helpful.
Yeah. And then I'll be more connected to myself, and then
that's right.
Feeling more connected in general.
That's right. And then it'll be easy to be connected with other people because ego won't be separating you. You're already connected. You can't not be connected. We are absolutely connected. But ego throws in that illusion of separation and convinces us that we are not connected. So when that goes away, you're obviously connected. Just another flower in the garden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
Gotcha. Take care. Bye-bye. Gosho.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. Sherry, that's such an excellent point that conditioning's quote recorder unquote is on play all the time.
Yes.
And it's up to me to stop that.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of tools for doing that.
Exactly. But that's a big thing scam that ego runs. You know, that when we're not actively recording and listening, nothing is happening. Oh, plenty is happening.
Yeah.
And it's all not good for the human.
Yes, it's all bad news.
Mm-hmm. All bad news.
Yes. And Sherry, we're going to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll come back to talk with more callers.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. Recording and listening is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry. Are you there, Sherry?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Perfect. All right. Here we go.
Thank you.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Todd calling from Kelowna, British Columbia.
Hello, Todd.
Hi. Wow, on back to that week, last week and this week, maybe I've been thinking last week's conversation.
Yeah, was it, yeah. I didn't know if we talked in the morning or on this show, or,
yeah.
I thought that was familiar, yeah.
Right. I'm not sure if you heard last week's show, but I was talking with Jen about how to respond to folks' inquiries about practice and how we represent practice out in the world, and I wonder what your encouragement and guidance would be.
Did Jen tell you anything?
Oh, yeah, she told me some great stuff. Yeah.
What'd she tell you? I want to see if I agree with her. I want to see if she was right.
Yeah, well, we first talked about the beads. I wear the precept beads that I've had for quite a while now. And I wear them mm-hmm. on the outside of my clothing. So it's a representation of the practice that I've made a commitment to. And mm-hmm. I get inquiries about the beads quite regularly. And
because mm-hmm. people just aren't used to guys in beads.
Well, that is for sure.
That, you know, I always wear mine, and people just say, oh, I love your necklace.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not probably not going to say that to you. So
yeah.
what are the beads? Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, what are the beads? It's so interesting. I think it's because maybe being a baby of the 60s and in my parents were hippies. So they always say, "Oh, are those hippie beads?" That's almost the predominant first question. Are those hippie beads?
What the heck are hippie beads?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I don't even know what hippie beads are because I'm a baby of a hippie. I was never a hippie, so I'm not even in that generation. But I just say no. They're actually a Buddhist rosary, and that kind of as Jen said, that kind of ends the conversation most of the time.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. Uh huh. And so, what can I help you with?
Right.
Moving on.
Yeah, what can I help you with? But then some folks, usually those beyond maybe acquaintances, maybe like family or close friends, will ask about like I make commitments to the radio show, and I make commitments to, you know, support calls, and I make commitments to the morning show. So they've gotten sort of used to my schedule where I make commitments and I rarely break them. So it's sort of like, oh yeah, Todd's on a call. Like oh, and it's so interesting. And sometimes I'll just say, you know, what is this call? Like, and I get a little challenged with that because I don't know the context or the content to present it because they're coming from nothing in practice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I get challenged when they ask maybe some specifics of my practice.
Uh-huh. And so if you're on a call and they
yes.
say, well, what is the call?
Yeah, like what do you talk about? Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so if it's, this is a people ask me, you know, what do you do?
Yeah.
And if it gets around to books, oh, you write books. What do you write books about?
Yeah.
And I'll always say, are you familiar with Zen Buddhism? And they sort of, they say, well, they just write books about life, you know, about family and relationship and depression, and all, you know, just the kinds of things that we struggle with,
I've lost you there. Yeah, is it me, Michael, or I lost you there?
Wow,
I don't have. And you're coming back
must
now,
be me.
Of course.
Must be me. Oh dear,
we can hear you now.
Now you're crystal clear.
Something about living in the woods, I swear.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like that. It's just, we just look at, you know, ways that people struggle and then talk about ways to maybe not struggle so much. And usually it's kind of with the beads, you know.
Yeah.
People's eyes sort of glaze over and it's like, okay, I got all I need to know about that. And sometimes somebody says, oh, God, you have a book on fear or you have a book on relationship, you know, and then I will often say, give me your address, I'll send you one.
Nice.
You don't need to do that, but, I mean, I have access. So it's just being with people and sort of taking them as far as they want to go with it.
Yeah, yeah. Without
explaining practice.
Right. That's what I was exploring with Jen. Is like that's where I get really changed. It's just too big. How to explain practice?
Well, what do you believe? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you believe?
Yeah. Yeah. What do Buddhists believe? What are your beliefs? They often say that. Like what do Buddhists believe?
Uh-huh.
What are your beliefs? And I say, that's such a great question. And then ours is we don't have beliefs. We don't believe nothing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which I freely share with people if they ask.
Yeah.
One of the things I like best about Buddhism is we don't believe anything.
Right. Yeah.
And then that often ends the conversation. But you know, Todd, one of the things you can do is just send them to the website.
Yes. Well, and Jen brought that up too, and it's something that I've been offering more is just saying, well, you know, our practice has a really great website. It's livingcompassion.org, and it's something that available to anyone, and that's kind of what I use as a resource. I do use it as a resource as well, you know, retreats and, you know, stuff. But, you know, maybe just kind of browse that and you know, look, see, and then let me know what you see. That's kind of where it goes, and then it gives them something to maybe pursue, like you said, if they're interested.
If they're interested. And and very often people, you know, it's just a kind of a making conversation.
It is.
And that's all there is to it. Because to me, in representing practice, the best thing, the best way that we can represent practice is just to be the kindest, most present, polite, caring person we can be.
Yeah.
And then, you know that guy that wears those beads? God, he's a nice guy.
Oh, I get that a lot.
Yeah?
I do.
Yeah.
It's sweet. I do get that a lot. He's a nice guy.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And somebody, you know, may put that together,
that
it has something to do with what you practice, and maybe people won't, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in early practice, I think there a lot of the previous conversation of the having that so much energy and so much energy and not being able to manage it. I was in kind of that where you say you encourage us not to proselytize or try to convert or try to convince, and I was kind of in that mode for quite a while because I had so much energy and I didn't know what to do with it, and I wanted to share that energy because I got a sense practice was giving me that energy because I came for so many decades of severe depression and no energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in the last quite a while, because I've been practicing quite regularly and quite diligently, I'm able to manage that energy, and it's easier not to, you know, go with that egoic way of it'll take practice and then kind of use it against me in trying to maybe impose it on someone else. Do you know what I mean?
Get you to say something that
unskillful,
make you regret, right?
Yes,
and
exactly.
So one of the things that, as you know, that we talk about often is just twinkle.
Yes, I love that.
You know, just go around guidance. And just be,
it.
A good energy, kind of like a light bulb. And,
beautiful. A beacon in the world.
And my teacher, would talk about being a social relief. You know, just somebody that people don't have to worry about. You know, he's a low maintenance kind of a guy.
Oh, brilliant. I love that. Yeah, that's really helpful. I'm glad I got to explore further this week. I've been looking at it since Jen and I talked, and this is really helpful, so I appreciate the support.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Anytime.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Sherry, and thank you, Michael,
take
and thank you.
Yourself.
I will take good care, and thanks for all of Sangha, and have a great night, and go happy.
Thanks. And go happy. Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. And Sherry, we have another caller here.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Sherry. This is Andrew in North Carolina.
Hey, Andrew.
How are you?
Good. And either I'm having deja vu, or did we just talk, didn't we?
I don't think I was in the queue for any other calls for a while, but email. Yeah, this might be what you're thinking.
All right. Okay, good. All right. All right. You're right. So, how are you doing?
Doing really well, thanks to practice and this amazing Sangha and all the support, and so good. It's kind of this thing of practice more when things are going well idea. I have had a lot of what would I say, compassion for the person who gets angry, and and willingness to, you know, just lavish time, just as much time as is needed with that, and create a safe space, you know, for everybody with that. And one thing that I saw recently, having some of that angry energy triggered, was that there's a lot behind the scenes that I had never known. Why do I get so angry so quickly? Well, it's all of this stored up energy or a big story, almost like a constellation of beliefs that can get easily triggered. I've been calling them karma balls. I was just talking with somebody about it, and was wanting to work more with some of these, and kind of hit a bit of a wall. I was really digging into some of them and just doing as much as I could with like two-handed recording and different things, and I kind of ran out of steam, and I just figured, well, let me just keep an eye on them, and if stuff comes up or if life drops in, hey, try this. But I just wanted to look
at
that.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, Andrew, because it does seem like the anger, the trigger, there's a trigger, and then it's just all of a sudden, right, just from I'm fine to in a rage. And then there's hardly a split second. And then when you start breaking it down, really paying attention, you realize, well, actually, it's not so sudden. I just wasn't paying attention to what was going on behind the scenes, as you say, that all of this stuff is stored there. So it's kind of like bringing a pot to a boil, right? And there's nothing going on, and then all of a sudden it hits the temperature and it can boil over because it's such a short time from hitting that boil to getting a big boil. And so that's really critical to be aware of that I don't get angry suddenly. I am angry all the time. Which is why in our precept it's not to be angry. Right? Because that I project, that's what you're catching on to. It's not episodic. It's not situational. It's just there, and it's kind of looking for a reason to spill over. And when it reaches that boiling point, anything can be the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's my experience. When one kind of content is sort of not as juicy for it, it just goes to a different thing, and it can seem really off the wall. It's like, why am I getting upset about that? I'm not really upset about that. Because it just had to shift. I think I've heard you guys say a problem looking for an excuse.
Yes. And so I'm projecting with that you're very aware of the conversation in your head, right? So it shifts to a new content, and it starts making a case for being upset over that.
And the worst ones, I think recently there was some call of some kind talking about when it's not conscious thought, when it's not things like voice, you know, words in my head, when it's just images. I mean, how do I refute an image, you know, or so a lot of times that's how anger feels for me. It's that just knee-jerk reaction rather than responding, a thing of just... there's no, should I get angry about this? It's just...
Right.
It's almost like there's a rock that somebody pushed way up a hill, and they're trying to destroy this village down in the valley, and all they got to do once they get it up the hill is a little, you know, one finger can...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what, at least for me, and I would imagine it's going to be the same for you, because I think it's a universal process. It is catching on to where that energy is all the time. So I can be experiencing. So say it's and the energy in the body is from between 1 and 100. So 1, deep sleep without dreaming, right? Just kind of gone, slightly dead. And then then there is just a volcano, all right, on the 100. And so if I operate at about a 75, then that's where I'm comfortable. But it doesn't take all that long to get from 75 to 100. That's actually, in the big picture, a fairly short distance, especially because if there's a lot going on, if I'm busy, if there's pressure, if there's stress, if there's that sort of thing, then I slide up to 85, right? Which is still comfortable. It's fine. It's high energy. There's a lot going on, moving fast, talking fast. Yeah, not a problem. But between 85 and 100, we can get there in a real hurry. And so with what we were talking about with Todd, about managing the energy, to me, that is as big an issue with mania or with depression, we'll use those terms. It's the same with anger, that we have to be managing that level of energy all the time. Because if we're not aware of it, if we're not conscious to it, present to it, paying attention to it, then it's going to get from 85 to 100 time and time and time again. Does all that hang together?
Oh, yeah. Very much resonates. There is this, I often feel this, and sometimes people laugh, is this, what do I do? And guessing that that's a little in a different direction of, instead of got to do something, probably something like paying attention is
yes.
Weird.
Well, and for me, it's being proactive. We can't wait around to see how we feel in order to make our choices, because how we feel is primarily dictated by an unconscious process that we call egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. And so whether it's dealing with depression, with mania, with anger, those are three, that there has to be a commitment to attending to that level of energy all the time. So it's not, well, what do I feel like doing today? I don't really feel like doing anything physical. I think I just like to, no, because that's not going to take care of me. Mm-hmm. And so, and now, does this change over time, Andrew? Yes, of course it changes over time. But at the point where you're talking about it, it needs to be a conscious, I am checking on this. It's like, you know, if you're an addict, you don't wait to see if you feel like using today. Right? That is just really not going to be a good strategy. Now, that's what ego would like us to do. You know, you don't need to look at that. You don't need to worry about that. That's not a problem. You don't need to. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. You have to be checking on it constantly, because it's up to you to take responsibility for managing that energy so that it doesn't come out in karmically programmed ways. Because it will.
Yeah.
It's not if it will, right? And then, of course, when we if we abdicate responsibility, then we're going to get the blame when it goes the way actually we know it's going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of wake up to, what did you do? It's the old ego tricking me into thinking that I'm it and I did that thing. Yeah.
That's right. And we could say, you know, there's a way in which we could say, well, you were. in that, I didn't take responsibility. So I don't have to feel bad about what happened, what ego did. I don't need to feel bad about that. But what I do need to take responsibility for is not going to sleep, because it's my responsibility to stay conscious so that the choices are made that don't serve suffering.
That really explains a lot. I think I had gotten tricked. You know, intellectually I know that, I guess the way I would say it is, acceptance doesn't mean inaction, but I've often gotten tricked. It's like my head will say, well, just pay attention and try not to get into self-hate about, you know, this anger. And it's got a little twist on it of just don't do anything. And it's exactly like
That's
you
right.
said, I do have a... not just an opportunity, but a responsibility to keep,
yes,
to stay awake, to pay attention.
That's exactly right. And as you work with this, because it's just energy, okay? It's not, we don't have sexual energy and emotional energy and intellectual energy and spiritual energy, and it's just energy. It's where it gets blocked that makes a difference for one person or another. Okay, and what we're doing is unblocking the energy so that it flows freely, and it's for our benefit rather than being blocked up and being used against us.
Wow.
So it really is, you know, if you had a big creek running through your property, and you have responsibility for managing it, for maintaining it, that's what you would be doing. You would make sure that it is flowing freely so that it can go where it needs to go and do what it needs to do, because you know if it gets blocked somewhere, it's going to spill out over the edges, just like us.
Yeah. It makes so much sense. The blockage, maybe, actually see if I'm understanding correctly. One way that it could get blocked is if there's a lot of resistance to it. It's like, no, this angry energy shouldn't be here. We got to get rid of this.
Oh, that's,
and really it's more just how it flows.
Well, that's putting out a fire with gasoline.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's there, as you know. That's there to keep it going. That's not there to to try to stop it. Because if we're going to end this violence with violence. Probably not, right? And so it's that image of the creek is a good one, because that's what you're looking for. And, you know, if it's the winter and it's a rainy year, you're going to be checking on that creek all the time. And I would say for you right now, it's the winter and it's a rainy year. So even an hour of not checking. Now, what's the conversation? What are the emotions? What's the world look like? What's being projected? What are the thought patterns in my mind? And starting to see those as clues about how your energy is being manipulated by ego, and how you need to take responsibility for undoing those manipulations by taking responsibility for handling that energy yourself, not letting it get blocked up. Conversations are big blocks, right? Conversations in the head, keeping it flowing so that it doesn't hurt anybody, starting with you. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking. We'll be talking.
Yes.
Ere long. All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you. Gotcha. Thanks, Micah.
Gotcha.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Andrew. And thank you, Sherry. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. Oh. Thank you, Michael.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. Thank you, Michael.
It.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll see you soon, good Lord willing.
I'll see you soon, good Lord willing. And that creek you were just talking about, don't rise.
It flows and doesn't do anything untoward. That's exactly it. All right.
Very good.
Go happy.
Thank you, Sherry. Go happy.
Good night.
Good night.